Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 7th of November. It feels very much like winter's here now, doesn't it? I suppose you don't really experience that, Kev, right?
No, it's still very warm here. I think high is 28, 29. So, it's cold at night here, though. That's the thing. Even though temperatures only drops to maybe 12, 13 degrees, which sounds warm. But no, it's freezing cold, especially when you live in.
You're not having to scrape your car in the mornings. And like this morning, it was a real frost and went for a run. You know, extremities were literally, I don't know why I didn't put gloves on. I have no idea, but anyway, first world problems, but it's nice. I'm feeling, you know, I always feel like this once you get this time of year out the way, you get Halloween out the way, you get that sort of, you know, bonfire night out the way, it's only a few weeks away to Christmas, and I'm looking forward to it. I think we can actually hopefully have a Christmas this year in the UK. That would be nice. Today, we're joined by Dr. Tom Oakley, CEO of clinical communication company Feedback PLC. Welcome, Tom. How are you doing today?
Hi, very good, thank you. Yeah, and enjoying the slightly cooler weather, but yes, all very good, thank you.
Good. So, do you want to talk us through a bit of what Feedback actually do?
Yeah, absolutely. So, as a company, what we're really all about is making platforms and technology that allow clinicians to make better decisions faster about patients from any location. And really, we do it three ways. We build clinical teams around individual patient journeys so that you can communicate about your patient. And fundamentally, that means you can get the advice and guidance from your more senior clinicians earlier in a patient pathway. And the second thing that we then do is that we pull in information about a patient and centralize it into that patient journey. So we show you their medical imaging. We can pull in things like their blood results, histopathology reports, other types of structured data, so that all the data that you need is also all in one place so that you can make those decisions on the go. And the last area that we really focus on is allowing you to make better decisions off the data that we're presenting you with by working with AI tools, machine learning tools through a number of our partners. So that's really how we make those better decisions faster.
Excellent. I saw there was announcement this week that the company raised sort of 10.7 million in the form of placing. And I was quite amazed seeing that the company originally was, or prior to the raise, was around about the 8-9 million cap. So it was like, you know, effectively doubled the cap in terms of their obviously in a strong cash position. Do you want to talk us through, elaborate on the plans and explain how that funding will actually unlock revenues and profit in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. So Feedback is probably a little known company on AIM. We've kind of flown underneath the radar, which I think is also why our cap has been so small. I don't think anyone quite realized the potential of what we were sat on until we announced and went out to raise the money for it. So we've gone out to raise that money predominantly for two very large opportunities, one here within the NHS and one also in India. That both opportunities actually utilize our full stack of technology. So we have our communication platform, Bleeper. We have a proprietary cloud architecture that stores data at a patient level called Care Locker. And then we also have a device called the Bleeper Box that allows us to take imaging from very remote locations and then push it through to the cloud. And we develop that for the UK veterinary sector. So the two opportunities, the first of them is around a community diagnostic hub. So at the minute, I'm sure everyone will know that there is a huge elective care backlog. It's been made considerably worse by COVID. And one of the approaches that the NHS is taking to deal with this is to move diagnostic capabilities from hospitals, bringing them into the community and centralizing them around the patient in the community. And the idea of that is that it means that you can use your imaging facilities in a hospital for your inpatient and emergency care, and you can use your facilities in the community for your elective and outpatient care. So it allows the NHS to separate those two work streams. But what it does mean is that we're creating a brand new healthcare setting for the first time in a generation. And it's like creating primary care for the first time. And what you've got to do is make sure that new healthcare setting plugs in and talks to all of your existing provider settings. And so you need the right digital infrastructure to do that. And that's really where Bleeper comes in. So Bleeper can create a patient pathway with a GP at one end and a hospital specialist at another. We can pull in all of the diagnostic information that's acquired in those community diagnostic centers, centralize it into that patient pathway. We can even plug into the regional hospitals to pull in all the historic studies for the patient, and again, bring them into that common patient journey so they're all there in one place. And then having centralized that data, we can then also store it in a patient's own cloud, which is CareLocker. And that cloud can then link to your national healthcare record and is available to all providers. And one of the big pain points in the NHS is that your data is currently very siloed. It's held by individual systems in individual hospitals. And as a clinician, as a doctor myself, every time I want to find information on a patient, I've got to log into about five or six different systems to find it. With Bleeper, I just log into the patient and I can see all of the information and I can talk to the people I need to talk to. So we are driving that pathway efficiency. The other thing is that the community diagnostic centres are going to generate a lot of reporting work for radiologists in particular, and we have a shortage of radiologists in the UK. So a lot of this reporting is going to end up being outsourced. And one of the problems with outsourced reporting is that you can't really get hold of a radiologist that reports these images when you've got a question about it. So if you're a GP or a hospital specialist in this community diagnostic pathway and you're looking at this image going, I'm just not clear on that report, you need to be able to talk to a radiologist in order to get that clarification. Now, one of the things that we can do with Bleeper is that we can actually share the DICOM imaging, the x-rays, the CTs and MRIs with these outsourced reporters. We can bring their report back into the pathway, but we can also connect you via our chat interface so you can have a direct discussion. So it makes this outsourced radiology service feel like an extension of your core clinical team. So that's the broad sort of view of what the Community Diagnostic Centre initiative is. And we've recently announced our inclusion in the pilot stage of this with Sussex ICS, who are one of the sort of front runners, the exemplar sites for how this could be delivered. And the CDC is a £10 billion programme of work. They are hoping to launch 150 or so of these sites across the UK. They're going to roll those out in waves. The first wave is going to have about 40 or so sites. And they're going to largely be informed by what happens at these exemplar sites. So by being in that exemplar site, we can actually show this is the digital footprint of how you should do it. This is a blueprint that you can use in all of the subsequent waves. And therefore, we can position our technology as a solution for it. The other thing I would say about Bleeper and CareLocker, the real advantage we have is that we sit on top of all of the existing infrastructure. We plug in and integrate. We're a digital glue that connects those community diagnostic centers into existing settings. You don't have to change your big IT systems. There isn't a huge overhaul of NHS IT here. We will just plug and play with what you've got and we'll join it all together around that patient. And that's the real unique proposal here. Now, the other big opportunity that we've gone out to raise this money for is in India around TB screening. So we were actually selected by the UK Department of International Trade for a trade mission back in December of last year. And this was really as a sort of precursor to Boris Johnson's state visit that, of course, unfortunately never happened because of COVID. But what it did mean was that we were able to sit with government and state level stakeholders within India and really understand what their pain points were and where they were going to be looking to bring funding on. And the thing that really came off from that was TB screening. So they have a big problem in India and actually internationally with TB. We know about 40% of the Indian population have latent TB. They get about 2.6 million cases, new cases every year. And so what Modi has now stipulated is that they want to eradicate TB within a 5 to 10 year horizon. That means they now need to work out who within the population has TB and who doesn't. And TB screening requires a chest x-ray. Now, chest x-ray is almost exclusively done in urban settings in India, but the vast majority of the population are rural. And what we don't have is the network capability to be able to take an x-ray in a rural setting and share it with a radiologist for reporting. But that is exactly the technology solution that we've developed with a Bleeper box, which is a solution we designed for the UK vets at CVS that allows you to take an x-ray of a horse in a stable, push it via a mobile phone network to our cloud, and then make it immediately available through Bleeper for discussion. And so the opportunity for us really has been evolving over the last 11 months in the background. And again, hasn't been something we've really been able to talk to until now. So we're at the point now where we have been able to talk about what we're doing here. So we've announced a partnership, one of many partnerships we're in discussions with at the minute, with a company called Cure.ai. Cure have an amazing algorithm that will diagnose TB off a chest x-ray. And what this will allow us to do is to have an x-ray taken in a village in India, pushed over by the bleeper box straight into the cloud over a mobile phone network. We can then immediately deploy the Cure.ai algorithm. And within seconds of that image being acquired, we can tell you whether that patient has TB or not.
Wow. So it's almost like, I guess, the AI side of things. It looks for a set pattern of a, you know, an infection or some, you know, dark mark or spots or something, and then it can determine whether or not that patient has actually got TB at that point, right?
Yeah, it's a bit like pattern recognition, and it's reflective of how we train as radiologists. So when I was training, I probably was trained on about 50,000 or so CT scans, chest X-rays. Now the Cure algorithm, to give you some idea of perspective, is trained on millions of chest x-rays, and it's slightly depressing how good it is, but it's definitely an amazing tool, and it was one of the first tools actually to get FDA approval for the US as well. So it really is one of the best examples of AI technology.
Yeah, so it's already been proven. I mean, I guess the other thing about Bleeper is it's the only platform which is CE marked as well, so that's another kind of USP, isn't it?
It is. So around medical communication more broadly, I mean, where we started out with Bleeper was selling Bleeper to individual NHS trusts, really to replace the use of WhatsApp by frontline clinicians, and also pagers and fax machines and email-based communication, and to give clinicians the right tool for the job. And one of the most important things to see at the right quality is the patient's medical imaging. We image almost every patient coming into hospital for good reason. I mean, you want to work out what's going on inside your patient without having to cut them open. So, and you will, every time you go into hospital, it's very rare that you'll go through without having an image of some sort of another, be it an ultrasound, an X-ray, or a CT or an MRI. And so imaging really forms the cornerstone of most clinical diagnostic work. Now, within the UK, the current UK legislation stipulates that if you are using a digital patient image for any diagnostic purpose, you have to be viewing that image on an appropriately certified clinical platform. And so that platform must hold a CE mark, or in the post-Brexit legislation, a UK CA mark. And it's not really just a matter of the regulation. That regulation is really there for patient safety. If you're not seeing that image in the right quality, you'll miss something. And that ultimately is going to hurt a patient. So fundamentally, Bleeper is there to ensure that that imaging is viewed at that right quality as part of the core communication platform. And so when we describe to trust what we really do, we say at a very superficial level, we are the clinical grade version of WhatsApp, and the only clinical grade version of WhatsApp, because we're the only ones that will bring you X-rays, CTs, MRIs, and even digital photos in the right clinical quality. So the moment you want to share an image of any kind, you've got to use Bleeper, because we're the only ones that keep you compliant.
Yeah, so moving away from human health, I believe there's also the veterinary space, also a deal announced with CVS.
Yes, absolutely. So the great thing about our technology is it's applicable in all sorts of settings, and we have always designed it in a way that, to keep that in mind, really, to make sure that it is usable across a broad suite. And the other thing is the NHS as an organization is typically quite slow in how it procures, how it makes decisions. And so you never want to rely on that as your only commercial avenue. So in parallel to working with the NHS, we did start looking at alternative market opportunities, and we were able to engineer opportunity with the equine division of CVS. And so Bleeper is now used across 20 of the equine practices for vet communication. But this is also where we developed the Bleeper box I mentioned earlier, because unlike in the human space, you tend not to image your animals in the hospital. You take the imaging to the horse. So a lot of their imaging is actually done in the field or in stables. And so we needed that networked ability to push the imaging to make it accessible.
So the interesting thing I'm asking myself is, how on earth did you get to this point yourself? How did it happen?
my backstory. So I trained as a radiologist in the NHS, and I was getting increasingly frustrated with the technology that we were relying on. One of the big problems, particularly for radiology, is that you have to share imaging between different hospital sites. And it can take 2.5 hours to do this through a digital portal called the Image Exchange Portal. And fundamentally, if that's a patient that's having an acute episode, something like a stroke, 2.5 hours is the difference between a patient surviving or ending up with disability. And so it was almost faster and quicker for us to burn the imaging onto a CD and send it with the patient in the ambulance, or even to send the patient straight down the road and get them re-imaged at the other hospital, than it was to try to push these images digitally. And that just wasn't acceptable to me. So I decided that I was going to take a sabbatical from my clinical training and actually join NHS England as a clinical entrepreneur fellow with NHS England. And what that allowed me to do for a period of about 4 years or so was really get into the central sort of streams of digital technology, work out what technologies were being looked at, what the actual digital problems were more broadly in the system, and then also what sort of solutions were available for us to do something about it. And it was at that time I came across Feedback, who had been operating as a medical imaging company for about 20 years. And when I saw the company and I looked at the technology, I just thought, wow, underneath the hood, hidden away here, are some incredible bits of technology that I think we can really do something with. So I decided, actually, I'm going to use this technology and I'm going to build around it the right infrastructure to provide a broader communication package. And then we're going to position this company into medical patient space. And that's exactly what we did. And we took Bleeper from a concept to a fully certified medical device, and in fact, into our first NHS commercial sale within a 2-year period, which in the medical world is really moving. I mean, it takes on average about 5 years typically to get your first commercial sale in the NHS. And that's even longer if that's a medical device. So to do that in 2 years was really shifting. And we could only have done it because we had that 20-year history and heritage of doing medical imaging. So we had a running start, so to speak.
And also because you were tied effectively to the NHS in the scheme, obviously, you knew who to speak to as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think when you are designing technology as a clinician for clinicians, it really makes sure that the product does what it needs to do. And it gives automatic credibility to what you're trying to do. And people don't see you as a foreign company just trying to make money off the public. They see you as one of their own trying to solve a problem that they know they're all facing. And that's exactly what we're doing.
From an escalation point of view, bringing people's care out into the community, which is basically what this is all about, I think, in terms of out of the hospitals into the community. And we're talking about many, many different situations to go into. How big can this become in the UK in terms of how many patients can you be looking after? How many patients will be in the cloud? How many systems will be in place? And I suppose the question, as we're all investors, is how much income is this company going to generate if it happens the way you hope it's going to happen?
Yeah, it's the key question, right? So the thing with the community diagnostic centers are that it provides an opportunity for us to take the technology not just to an individual sale to an individual hospital, but to actually sell it to a region. And we are also, again, hitting this opportunity at exactly the right time. So this is now the focus of the government. It's the focus of the NHS England, and it's the focus of every provider up and down the country. How do we address elective care backlog? And the important thing is that funding is actually being brought in to do this. So the government has already pledged a £10 billion framework to initiate the CDC program. And the way that that works is that the money gets drawn down from Treasury, it goes to NHS England, and then is devolved down to something called the ICSs, the Integrated Care Systems. And there are about 40 or so of those, and they are responsible for procuring technology for a region, so a regional population, probably in the order of about 1.5 million patients each. And that gives us sort of central decision makers for the first time that we can really have these conversations with. And that's going to be key to realizing this opportunity. And in terms of how the structure works for this, there's two components. So there's the licensing for Bleeper to the clinical users within an area. So these are the GPs and the hospital clinicians that will be using Bleeper for the communication around that patient journey. But then there is also the storing of that data in the centralized care locker, and that is a separate charge. The slightly broader opportunity here is that we can also use the community diagnostic hubs to recognize further growth of our core Bleeper sales into individual hospitals. If a hospital is using Bleeper to communicate about a patient between primary and secondary care, it makes perfect sense that they then use it internally for their communication as well, because the clinicians are used to using the platform. We will continue to be selling Bleeper to individual NHS trusts through the NHSX clinical communication framework. So this is a central procurement framework that originally had £3 million of central funding alongside it. It was launched last summer. And it won't surprise anyone to know that £3 million doesn't stretch very far when you put this across the whole of the NHS. And so a lot of trusts approached this framework and got very interested in to see what sort of tools were available to address their problems. But there wasn't enough funding there to really incentivize them to do anything. So in recognition of that, NHSX have now brought on £125 million worth of funding that should come online later this year. And I think that will really be an opportunity for us to drive both adoption of Bleeper into an individual NHS trust, but then also at this regional level through the CDC program. And in terms of how many people we can get on it, I would like to see everyone in the NHS using Bleeper. And I would like to see every patient's record on Care Locker. And I'm sure a lot of people will say that's quite unrealistic. However, I would say that we are so uniquely positioned to deliver this digital infrastructure at a regional level and to provide that patient-centric storage of data in their patient's own Care Locker that actually we can solve a number of the NHS's pain points through one procurement. And so I think we actually stand a reasonable chance of doing it. It's worth saying about Care Locker, because we've not really discussed it. Care Locker is an amazing piece of technology. So what Care Locker allows us to do, because we're centralizing data around a patient through Bleeper as part of their clinical pathway, we can now actually store that data at a patient level rather than a system level. And what I mean by that is, in a traditional cloud model, you put huge data sets up into the cloud. So you put all of your electronic patient record data into one cloud silo and all of your PACS data into one PACS silo. What we're doing is taking information relating to an individual patient from each of those systems, centralizing it and then storing it in a patient's own cloud. And that has a number of clinical advantages. Firstly, around security, which is always first and foremost in everyone's mind. If you want to hack in to a patient's data in a Care Locker setting, you've got to hack into each individual patient's record in order to access it. Now, that means that we can detect a security breach early, we can shut it down, but we also know immediately which patient information has been compromised. Now, if you compare that to a traditional cloud model where you hack once, you gain access to a million patients worth of data, you have no idea whose data has been compromised during that attack. The other big thing for us is around cost efficiency. So again, in a traditional cloud model, you don't know which patients are active or inactive in a care pathway. So you end up storing all of your data on very high cost, low latency cloud. So it's always accessible to the clinical setting. Now, because of Bleeper and Care Locker, we know exactly which patients are coming through a care system and which ones aren't. And those patients that are not, we can actually store on something called Glacial Cloud, which is considerably cheaper. It takes a lot longer to draw the data out of it, but it does actually make it much more affordable. And then we can move patients between those two cloud levels. So the patient gets discharged from the care setting, they get put onto Glacial. If they get admitted onto a care pathway, they get moved up to this slightly more accessible but more expensive cloud. And the last thing is around scalability. And this is where the opportunity really sits for the NHS, because the NHS is looking at cloud. It's looking at how to make those cloud transitions, because it is the future. A cloud is actually more cost effective. It's much more secure generally than traditional models of data storage. But the question is always being, if we want to move a whole hospital or a whole region into the cloud, that's a huge undertaking. It's a mass data migration. It's very, very expensive. It's hugely resource intensive, and it's not particularly secure to do a mass movement of data. Now, what we can do with Care Locker is we can transition an organization to the cloud on a patient-by-patient basis as they come through a care pathway. So there isn't a mass data migration. we are just extracting the data, relating to that patient, centralizing it and storing it every time they come through a care pathway. And over the course of a year, 2 years, 5 years, all of the patients within a region will have come through that system and they'll all have a care locker.
It sounds to me like very much like it's something that's, it's a revamp, isn't it? It's something, an archaic system that, as you say, was done with old pages and facsimiles, is now needs modernizing. And this seems like the perfect solution to that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we have to be realistic about it. We are all using our mobile phones for every aspect of our lives now. And it seems unreasonable to expect clinicians to continue to use, in many cases, paper. And even when they have gone digitals, to still rely on pages, email and faxes to communicate with each other.
Yeah.
It's not secure to start with, and it's also not safe for patients. The delays cause huge harm to patients. And one of the great privileges we had in the last 2 years was to actually be able to use Bleeper during COVID-19. And we were able to support Pennine Acute Hospitals Trust with their response to COVID-19. And the way that we did that was that actually a lot of senior clinicians have comorbidities and had to shield, but you needed their expertise on the front line. But we were able to connect the junior doctors who remained on the front line with the senior stakeholders. And therefore, they were able to offer that advice and guidance to junior colleagues who remained. And in fact, we had one consultant who went back to India to shield with their family and was still able to run the entire care pathway from India with their junior colleagues who remained on the front line. Now, that wouldn't have been possible without Bleeper as a technology. And it was also been very interesting using Bleeper at Pennine over the last year to 18 months, because they have done their own benefits analysis of the platform. And we find on average that we're saving 36.3 weeks of clinical time per year. Mm. That's the equivalent of having another member of your clinical team. It's like having another doctor on your team. So this technology is not only safer, but it is also faster. And if we're looking at how we drive efficiencies and pathways, this is exactly how you do it. And it's probably worth me just mentioning quickly there at that junction, the AI side of this. So a lot of AI companies are in existence now. They're all have some amazing technologies. They're all extensively funded and they're going at the healthcare market very, very aggressively. Now, a lot of these tools are based around medical imaging, and a lot of those medical imaging tools are being sold at radiologists through PACS workstations. Now, a lot of those tools, I think, hold limited benefit to the radiology community. So if you took, for example, a tool that will diagnose a fracture, I should be clinically trained to be able to spot a fracture. And if I have to deploy an AI tool every time I do a report on a patient, it's probably actually going to slow me down. But if you gave that same tool to a nurse or a junior doctor in A&E, suddenly you can get that diagnostic result much earlier in the patient pathway, long before a radiologist has ever got to see that study. And I think that's the true power and the true potential for AI, is to give it to frontline clinicians and put it right into their hands. And that's where Bleeper is so uniquely positioned. So we hold that user relationship. We're there on their mobile device in the palm of their hands. We process all the data anyway clinically that these tools need in order to operate. So we can share the medical imaging study with the AI provider in the background, have them process it and bring the report straight back in. So Bleeper can actually be a frontline deployment for AI, a point of care deployment tool for AI. And that, I think, is a huge, unique opportunity for us.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you the same question again. I know you're a doctor and you don't like numbers, but how much money do you think is possible to come through this company with what you're doing?
Well, we are addressing a sort of total available market in excess of 10 billion globally. I think that the CDC opportunity is a total addressable market probably of about 93 million here within the UK. So a sizable figure, especially considering that we are now live with the exemplar site right at the front runner of that. We are very well positioned for it. And within India, the TB opportunity is enormous. So, and actually, let me take you through that in a bit of detail. So, at the minute, TB screening studies are typically charged between about 2,000 and 2,500 rupees per screening episode, which is about £20 to £25. Now, we can provide our technology suite into that space for £2 at a 80% EBITDA margin, so sort of 90% plus gross margin. And that will allow us essentially to really scale that technology with clinical partners on the ground in India. And this is really how we scale and adopt this in India. So the thing we didn't mention earlier is that we've been spending the last 11 months with the Department of International Trade working out who the right partners on the ground are to do this within India. And so we've announced that we have a partnership with Cure.ai, but we're also in discussions with telco companies who can supply the cellular network coverage, but also the bleeper box hardware as a managed service on the ground. And also large hospital chains within India who are able to provide the radiologists and the clinical specialists who can provide a definitive endpoint to this TB screening pathway. And so what that means is that we will go into this TB screening with the right clinical partners who will hold these government state level contracts. And we're leaving 90% of a potential TB screening contract on the table for those clinical partners. So we are really positioning ourselves as a technology solution into this TB screening clinical service. It's also really important to think about it because as a UK company, a relatively small UK company, we won't be able to stand this up on the ground unless we partner. So we have to get the right clinical partners that can scale this. The Indian government also won't contract the TB screening service to a UK provider. They'll want to use local clinical services, and as they should. And so really, we have to identify the right clinical partners who will own those state-level contracts on the ground and then supply our service into them. Where the opportunity gets particularly exciting for us in India is around the scale of that. So if you're going to screen an entire population within a five-year period for TB, you have to really be doing about 20% a year. Even if you hit 15% of a rural population of one state, let's take Rajasthan, for example, that is 7.7 million patients every year who you have to screen. And at £2 a head, that's actually about £15 million worth of revenue. And that really begins to stack. Now, there is a broader long-term opportunity linked to this, which is something called the National Digital Health Mission. And it's another one of Modi's government's initiatives that is basically saying that actually they would like every Indian citizen to have a health ID and linked to that health ID, a national digital care record. Now, most of the population do not have a health ID at the minute. And so the TB screening program is the perfect opportunity to engage the population. So as they attend for TB screening, they can be given a national health ID. The TB screening episode that we store on CareLocker can perform the first part of that digital care record, which means that actually CareLocker could become the clinical cloud store for the Indian healthcare record. And that is a much, much larger and much, much longer term opportunity that we're positioning ourselves.
Tom, you need to get a bit more excited about this because you're very, very relaxed about it. There's hundreds of millions of pounds.
Well, actually, the CareLocker opportunity is an £8 billion opportunity annually for us, to give you an idea of the scale.
£8 billion or rupees?
Pounds.
Okay.
And the thing is,
how do you feel about your market cap now then based on these opportunities?
Well, I have for a long time felt that feedback is being very undervalued on the market, and largely because we've not been able to talk about the things that we've been doing. But now that we are, I think that you are going to see some significant shifts in that. And I hope that everyone listening to this will understand the potential of what we're about to do and why it was necessary for us to go and raise the funds that we did, because now we are properly resourced to go and do this. Safe to say, we are now a company that is firmly on the radar of some very exciting partners, and we are really rip-roaring to go and do this. And in fact, having just announced the funding, I spent the last 4 days traveling all around for various site visits within the UK to get the ICS CDC opportunities moving. But then also we've had numerous calls back to back with India to really get things operationalized. So we're on the verge of really kick-starting this now.
So if all things go well, okay, because all of these huge opportunities are not going to happen like this, because we know that's not how it works. How do you envisage it scaling up? You know, so for, in other words, the NHS opportunity, you're piloting this now. By the end of next year, what's the situation? Are we talking about the first 40 wave happening, or it's going to take longer than that? Or tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so within the NHS, I think the first wave of 40 will start to come through any time between now and March of next year. It may roll slightly later than that, given the time delays often in the NHS. So let's say probably by the summer. And we would be positioning ourselves to be part of as many of those 40 sites as we possibly can. I think the opportunity in India, again, the way to do this is to stand up a pilot in the real world, take that real world evidence, take that to a state level government contract, because that's where the funding is held currently, in collaboration with our clinical partners. And then actually that will become self-funding, certainly in India, because if we are generating that level of revenue within one state, that will fund then the expansion into a subsequent state, and we can probably roll two or three states in parallel given that level of revenue generation. So it becomes a bit like a rolling stone. Once we've started, the momentum builds and builds and builds, and that's how we really drive the scale of this.
Yeah, the 40 that you talked about with the NHS, I'm intrigued, really. Surely if the pilot works and they want all the dots to join up in the NHS, then surely all 40 are going to take it. It would be insane not to. What happens then if I'm patient A and I live in Bristol and then I move to Manchester, which now Manchester hasn't taken the bleep, but Bristol has, what happens?
It's a very good question. We think that this is one of the rare occasions when the NHS really should actually procure one solution for doing this. And we are making that case both centrally at a very senior level, but also regionally. And you will have to come at this from multiple angles all at once. And fundamentally, it's no good us doing that as a commercial organisation. That has to come from within, which is why we need our partners at Sussex ICS to really lead that. Which they very much are doing. And that's one of the reasons we spent time actually getting in with the Exemplar site to do this. So there will be a natural lessons learned where the NHS will take this and showcase it around its own organisations. That still doesn't guarantee that those individual ICSs will adopt the same solution, but it's the best way of doing it. In your example, one of the advantages of the care locker system is that we will make that openly available to all NHS organisations. So if you're lucky enough to be one of those patients in Manchester with a bleeper care locker solution, your information will be available wherever you go. If unfortunately you're that patient in Bristol, then I would write to your local ICS and demand that they get bleeper and care locker.
Yes. Okay. I'm with you. Okay. Well, it's incredibly exciting. I mean, from the point of view of the numbers you talked about, and I always like to talk about the numbers, then we're looking at billions in revenue in the next, say, 3 to 5 years. I mean, even the India thing boggles my mind. We've got 1.3 billion people in India. Okay, let's discount maybe 300 or 400 million of those as small children, because the population has been growing quickly. So you've got 800-900 million people all need tested. That's a lot of money.
It is. It is. And it's also an opportunity to do a huge amount of good in the world. And that's the great thing about this company and this technology. Yes, it's commercial, but it's commercial in a way that's actually delivering and a benefit to us as a society and as us as a population. So it's a great thing to be part of, and I hope that our shareholders really feel that and really believe in this vision and the mission, because fundamentally you are enabling something that is going to transform the world for the better. And what a great thing to do with your money.
And there's got to be another 10 or 15 countries that you could comfortably discuss this with. I mean, I live in Egypt, as I say. I mean, this sort of system would be perfect here. The system is so antiquated, it's scary. You know, so you get 110 million people. Nobody's got any medical ID. Nobody's got any idea what's going on. You go to the doctor, you have to tell him your history. There's no chance of him ever having any history of anything you've ever had or done or have a problem with. So, numerous countries must be a measurable amount of rollout for this type of thing.
There's a whole world out there, and but you've got to start somewhere. And interestingly, that's also why, not only because of my background and because of the fact that we're a UK company, but that's also why you start in the NHS. Because if the NHS use your product and you can validate it there in that setting, that has a lot of credibility internationally. If you get that NHS stamp of approval on your product, that counts for a lot. And so it was worth us putting the legwork in to really embed Bleeper into the NHS to get that sign off. But now we have to look at broader horizons in multiple opportunities. And the first of those will be India.
Yeah, very good. So this program's called the Sunday Roast. So we have to ask you, what is your favorite Sunday roast?
Well, it's roast chicken for me. Plain and simple. I just love it.
and the extras?
Oh, it's got to be a good Yorkshire and parsnips. Absolutely.
Parsnips. We haven't had that one before. And do you want thick gravy or thin gravy?
Thick gravy. I don't like watery stuff.
And what about a drink? What do you wash it down with? Do you go with nice red, or are you a champagne? I mean, prosecco, or what's your tipple?
Oh, no. Red wine for me, please. Yeah.
Well, on that note, Dr. Tom Oakley, CEO of Feedback PLC, thank you very much.
Thanks ever so much. Bye bye.
Well, I mean that was certainly an interesting chat we just had. He's a nice gentleman too, wasn't he?
It was a bit mind blowing, really, that Indian thing and £8 billion of potential revenue with 90% EBITDA, I think he said, or 85% EBITDA. That's quite a significant amount of profit. And everybody needs one of these tests, and it's a couple of pounds. That's 1.6 billion. And then you've got their records to be kept, which would be an ongoing fee, if you like. It's not just a one-off. I think the size is just phenomenal. And also, obviously, the NHS needs to get its finger out and do it. As we all know, going to the NHS at times, like paper records and all sorts of things. We love the NHS, don't get me wrong, because free service, but the technology and the IT and everything else that's around it is not exactly...
It certainly needs a revamp. Let's hope that Feedback can deliver that and actually get deeper in the care locker out there, because it will certainly change lives and make a real impact. But so anyway, other than that, how's your week been on the markets and in general? I know you're suffering. I think you're suffering from a bit of a chest. I think you've got is it the remnants of COVID, do you think?
I don't really know, but I've been feeling crappy now for about a month. So yeah, now I've got a chest infection, so I'm on antibiotics now. So we'll see if hopefully this clears it up. The market. We talked about the one stock that made me want to cry last week, which was Chill, and they had results out this week. And I suppose this is a big lesson for me, really. All last year, all this year, I should say, it was going up and up and up and up on effectively what we can now say is hype, without numbers and without quantification of what was actually coming down the line. And it's come to this point now where the stock dropped to 10p, basically. It's come back a bit now to 13.5p, which now I've sort of reassessed and looked at the figures and the potential way forward. I think now it's looking okay. It's got revenues. It has no debt, and its value is probably about right. So let's see what Viridian and is it Gorilla can do, and these guys can do in distributing these products and other products that they've got. And hopefully it can start getting some of my money back, because last year I made a lot of money on this stock, or over the last 12 months, I should say, and now I've probably lost it all. So, yeah, and why? I think I've got to question myself that I was very emotionally attached to this particular stock. And in our investing world, this is not necessarily a good thing. I've been having this conversation with one of my friends about Tesla and how he's obsessed with Tesla, and Tesla's going to do amazing things. And I'm telling him to diversify and he's not listening, just like I wasn't listening really with Chill. So I think the lesson that we have to learn here as investors is, you know, even if we think it's the best thing since sliced bread, we need to think seriously about our proportions of our assets that we put in them and so on and so forth. I am a risk taker, unfortunately. So I like the risk, but if it pays off, it's wonderful. If it doesn't pay off, you know, it's cry time, isn't it? It's like, yeah. Oh dear, this is not great. So yeah, since the highs of about March or April, my portfolio is a car crash basically. Because I've basically been in stuff that is being linked mainly to the commodities and also the likes of Chill, which hasn't helped as it's just gone down and down and down and down and down and down. So yeah, I've had a contemplation week, not really feeling very good physically and mentally either because of being ill, but you know, we move on. And hopefully things will look better. Now that Chill has drawn a line, I feel like this is the line in the sand. You know, it's like we've been ignoring telling anybody about the situation for months and months and months. Now they've told us there has been sales. It's not brilliant, but it's a base to work from. And now a company with all of these potential opportunities worth, I think it's about 25 million quid now. I think now it's undervalued personally. And that sounds crazy coming from the guy who was saying it was undervalued at 80p, but now it is undervalued at 13p or whatever it is, you know, so.
Mm. I'm still not convinced. I mean, when I read through the revenue numbers again, that were pretty lackluster, let's say. And I sent you a message saying, good luck with that one today because it's not looking. I said it at 30p, single figures would come. And I think it hit 9.25 or 9. I don't know whether it went into the 8, but it certainly it's bounced back a little bit. But I don't know. It's still really pretty. I think the whole of the CBD space has been beaten down anyway. It became the hot sector to be in, didn't it? When Beckham got involved with Carnarvon or Cellular Goods, sorry, and then Carnarvon came on the scene. Then you had MXC and all NGC Pharma and all these different plays. And now when you look at them, they're a shadow. All of them are a shadow of the former self. You know, even Love Hemp is, you know, it's going to be amazing if it remains in the twos at the moment, looking at the way it's trading. You know, I mean, it's been literally decimated from its high. So I think, as I say, until you get that whole buzz again around the CBD stocks and the CBD resource sector, then or the wellness sector, should I say, then, you know, you're not going to, they're not going to move much. I mean, obviously, that there's, you know, potential uplisting could happen. Andrew Mail, the chairman of Love Hemp, did an investor update call, and that's quite why it was called an investor update call, because there was no real updates in there, unfortunately. It felt more it was aimed at the new investors, which it probably, hopefully it was. But yeah, I'm not quite sure what the intention was there. But, you know, looking at their kind of like their promo reel and everything with all the people who've got on board, yeah, it looks fantastic. But it remains to be seen whether or not they will actually get an uplift in the share price when this uplift actually happens. So, yeah, very much agree with that. In terms of my week, Ben's consolidated pretty well. I think it's around the 20 pence mark now. So it moved up at the beginning of the week into the 25 range. Very, very impressive start. But obviously the you know, people taking profit, which is completely understandable in this market. So it's consolidating well around that 20 pence range. So still lots to play for on that one as they go into hopefully go into the production starting in December. With their
there was a buy from one of the directors as well, wasn't there, on Friday?
Yeah, that looked good, didn't it, this morning, a show of confidence from one of the non-executives. Yeah, it's looking good. But other than that, it's really been a week of it's not been the best one, has it? I mean, there's been a lot of things that have tumbled back. Extract Resources was hovering around the 6p last week, and now I think it's dropped back into the low fives, or even high fours. Just awaiting news, isn't it, in this current climate? And I feel that there's a lot of things that we're waiting on for stocks that we've talked that are just hanging in the balance, and hopefully if we can get something out by year end, then that they may move up accordingly. But
I mean, especially in the resource sector, when you look at it, we've got Rambler basically waiting for news that the hedge has finished, that they've produced enough copper to get rid of the hedge. Once that's done, then we know the production is increasing, and they're going to also benefit from the higher copper price. You've got Keras Minerals, who've countless numbers of assay results with Jubilee being sent to Australia. You know, I think it's more than 700 different things for all the different dumps around Cyprus, and also in talks with Byzant as well, who I think a week or two back raised so that they can have money to be involved in those things. What else? Yeah, you already mentioned Ben's Creek. Everybody's been talking about the coal this week because of the COP26, but I don't think the coal price for coke has really changed very much. It might have gone down a little bit, I think, but it's still close to those record highs. All this coal talk was about the thermal stuff. And interestingly, that's going to actually have a positive effect on power stations and things rather than the other way around, you know, the coal producers.
There was another one in the coal space, wasn't there? We talked about, well, we talked about it together. It was OPG Ventures, and they are a thermal coal, not a thermal coal producer, but a thermal coal user, in the sense that they run power plants in India, in the Tamil Nadu region, and they also have an investment or a percentage. I think it's about 30%, 31% of a solar farm as well. So 32% of a solar farm in the Chennai or the Tamil Nadu region. So both of them, I think one's running around 142 megawatts. So you might correct me on the actual power output of these, but I know that the solar farm is around 62 megawatts.
Yeah, and the other stuff's about 440 megawatts altogether, I think.
Yeah,
there's so four different plants. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, we've got all this COP26 going on and coal's bad. Let's just stop coal, full stop. But it was already written in the edicts of, I think, the Paris scenario, that China, India, and a large parts of Asia, we're gonna have to have coal power and coal power stations till 2040, 2050 maybe, because they have no way of quickly changing power structures, especially when they're growing at 6 to 8 to 10% as economies, and they've got 1.3 billion people. So it's like physically not possible, unless we want them just to stop using electricity, which is not going to happen. So, you know, there's this, on the one hand, you've got COP26 saying, you know, the world's going to die, we're going to do this. On the other hand, you've got economies saying, well, we have to carry on, we can't just stop. So it's like pull and push, pull and push, pull and push. And I think the world understands that about China and India, that they have to transition, but they cannot transition as quickly as other countries because of the sheer vastness of them, you know? So, this week I've taken a couple of positions, just very small ones, I have to say, but I was very interested in the RNS this morning for quantum blockchain. I'm not really a big guy for this whole Bitcoin thing, but these guys seem to be really trying to push the boat out to save energy and increase the speed of finding this stuff. You know, a 24% increase in that with lower energy costs, it's going to have a really positive effect, I think, if this becomes available to lots of different people.
Yeah, it's funny. I was looking through the one I mentioned, I think it was last week, was this AC8 with the guy behind Peppa Pig. And through that, I found this other company, Bay Capital, BAY is the ticker, and they've got, I think, there's 70 million shares in issue. They're about a 13 mil cap. But the bizarre thing is they there's only like, it looks like about 150,000 shares in free flow. 69.9 million. So that they're held, you know, by directors. You've got chairman holding about 21%. You've got the David Williams, the director, who also holds 20%. And then you've got nominees and then institutions involved as well. Just looking at this pie chart now. And actually, when I did a bit of drilling down into the chairman, chairman is a guy called Peter Tom, and the director is David Williams. And what I found was that they've got a previous proven track record in actually taking a small, very small cap company from the single of millions to a £1 billion company, and that was in the form of Breeden Aggregates. I mean, basically, it really is just a cash shell. The initial placing was substantially oversubscribed, raised about £7 million to support the company's M&A search and diligence activities in the pursuit of its first acquisition. And that's within the industrial construction and business service sectors and the software and tech companies which service those industries. So market cap around the 12, 30 million, cashed up to the tune of 7 mil. You know, what is there in there? What enterprise value have got in there? 4 or 5 million at the moment, really, from two people, two guys who've had a proven track record of delivering, taking companies in the past from single millions into the £1 billion space. Definitely a speculative punt on that one. So have a look at it, see what you think, do a bit of research on it. And it looks good. And as I say, the fact that there's such little free flow out there does make me think that any buying on this one, and it will change and it will go. So I quite like these cash shells and these SPACs, especially when you've got, you know, two guys with a proven track record at the helm running things. And they've obviously, with it being oversubscribed, they've obviously got some real support in the city there. And they only listed at the end of September. So yeah, definitely one to watch, one of Philly's one to watch. Other than that,
very good. The other one that we need to mention, really, because they had big news this week, was Valorex, who we had on a few weeks ago.
Yeah, well, obviously, so, we had the midweek with Susie, didn't we, this week? But yeah, we had her on the roads. But yeah, that they had some very very exciting news on the letter of intent for Val 201. I think there was a panic sell off because investors genuinely didn't understand how big potential that there is or could be within this kind of this letter of intent or this deal. And yeah, I think that it's been overdone, really. I think it's been oversold.
Yeah, so if you want any more information on that one, have a quick listen to the midweek takeaway. Gives you the full shooting match. But basically, I think the shares started around 50 something, zoomed up to 60 something, and then crashed basically down to 30 and then bounced heavily off 30. They were around 40 yesterday, I think, and now they're back down 30 something. So it's all over the shop at the minute. But basically, this is the start of Val doing what they said they were going to do. You know, they're going to have enough cash for the next couple of years if this deal happens. They're going to have income coming in every month from consultancy fees. And they're speaking to all of the different projects that are available in the universities around the UK to get the best to take them to preclinical trials and then sell them on for someone else to do the expensive bit. And then they still keep a stake in the thing. So it looks very interesting, I have to say. And now at this type of price, it seems like a good bet. But anyway, have a listen and you can listen to Susie and see what you think.
I think it's time to get off, sign off and go and have a Sunday roast.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to have a Sunday roast. I think another antibiotic tablet might just be the thing.
Slice of wafer thin ham.
Okay.
Good.
All the best, mate. Bye-bye. Yeah.